from San Francisco, California, this is the Rock and Roll Geek Show.
This is the story of my rock and roll butler.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. My name's Michael Butler. Thanks a lot for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today is Wednesday, September 11th, 2019, and it is 6:12 p.m. when I'm recording this episode. As you can hear, I'm in the car doing this show. Kind of a continuation of the dog days. I wanted to do a regular show this week, and I apologize for not doing one. I'm not going to apologize, because people apologize for skipping a show or whatever, and your apologies after a while become kind of lame. So I'm not going to apologize. I've just had a busy time. My daughter is getting married on Saturday, so the plan was to do a full show tomorrow night. She got into San Francisco on last Saturday, and actually the original plan was to do a show on Monday, but her and her fiance Alan have kind of taken over my podcast studio at home, because they were working on, well, I had to edit a bunch of music for them. I edited the father and daughter dance, which is Robin Zander, Love Comes. I had, by edit, I mean we needed to make the songs shorter, because she wants to keep all the songs down to 2.5 minutes. So I had to edit a 5-minute song by Robin Zander, which is on Countryside Boulevard, Love Comes, which is originally a Cheap Trick tune. It's a great tune. It's going to be a good father-daughter dance. I had to edit that down. I had to edit the processional dance, which I don't remember what. That's Haley Reinhart doing an Elvis song. Is that right? I can't help falling. I can't help falling in love. That, well, she says, this girl sings it. I think it's a country girl. I don't know. I don't know who this person is, but I had to edit that down. Had to edit the groom and mother of the groom dance, which was the Beatles' Let It Be. I had to edit a few more down as well, and so that took over the computer on Monday. And then Tuesday, did not have a mat at dad. I could have done a show on Tuesday, but they were down in my podcast studio editing playlist music. Wait a minute, Tuesday? Oh, Tuesday was last night. I went to Iron Maiden last night. That's, yes. I went to Iron Maiden last night, which is what I'm going to talk about, actually, in a few minutes. I'm now on my way to Featherwitch practice, because Featherwitch is playing my daughter's wedding. We're reuniting. We kind of broke up, and we're reuniting for the wedding, because Martina, we had this commitment to play her wedding for the last year now. So we have to, I made sure, because when one person in the band said they didn't want to do it anymore because they want to be a stay-at-home mother, I said, well, can you at least play my daughter's wedding? Because if we cancel my daughter's wedding, she's going to kill me. So we are reuniting for this show. We had a practice last week, and tonight we have practice. We're practicing all the way in Santa Rosa, California, which is about 60 miles north of San Francisco, and it takes about 2 hours to get there. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm on my, and I have to bring a PA back, because we have to supply our own PA at the wedding. They're getting married at a winery in Gilroy. The wedding rehearsal dinner is on Friday. The wedding is on Saturday, so I have to go down to Gilroy for the rehearsal. Then we're having a dinner, and I think we have a hotel down there in Gilroy, I think. And then I'm staying there again on Saturday. So I could have done a show. There's just trash in my car. My truck's a mess. I could do a show tomorrow, but my stepdad, John, is coming into town with his girlfriend. So I'm probably going to, they're getting in at like 6, so they're going to be You know, I'm going to have to visit with them, so I won't be able to do a show tomorrow. So I figured what I would do is just give a little quick update while I'm driving to Santa Rosa, since I have an hour or an hour and a half, 2 hours left of driving to do. I was kind of not looking forward to this week. One, because I knew I was not going to get any sleep, because Iron Maiden was last night, which I'll tell you about in a minute. It was in Oakland. I didn't get back until midnight, and then I knew I had Featherwoods practice. When I have back-to-back nights of being out late, at my age, it's tough going to work on 4 hours of sleep. So, but where was I? So I have to, also, I have to do a Father of the Bride speech. I have to get up in front of everybody and make a speech. I'm not that afraid, I'm not that nervous speaking in front of a bunch of people, but doing a speech is going to be kind of tough. I have not written one. I kind of have an idea of some bullet points I'm going to talk about. I think I'm going to talk about, you know, some memorable moments in my daughter's and my life together, and conclude with a very touching, memorable moment. And hopefully I'll bring the house to tears. And hopefully I will not cry like a little blabbering baby. I don't mind if a couple of tears stream down my eye. You know, that's kind of touching. But I worry if I'm going to be bawling like a baby, like, which is an extreme possibility. Very much of a possibility. So I'm a little bit stressed out about that. And not really stressed out. It's just the things that are on my mind. But last night I went to the Iron Maiden show. My friend Mick Punk bought floor seats, they're not seats, but bought floor tickets, because it's general admission on the floor. He took me last time they came here on the Book of Souls tour, which was really good. Ghost opened up and they sucked, of course, but this was the Legacy of the Beast. As you know, Iron Maiden's doing, you know, they're bringing out the classics on this tour. They do that like every other time they come. You know, one time, as you know, if they have a new album, they'll play mostly new songs throughout their entire world tour. And then the following year, they will, or a couple years later, whatever, the next tour that they come around, they'll play, you know, old stuff. Last night was old stuff, Legacy of the Beast tour. And the opening band was The Raven Age, which one of the guitar players is Steve Harris's son. Now, I don't know his name, but I heard Steve Harris on Eddie Trunk's show, and Steve Harris was talking about how great The Raven Age was, and Eddie Trunk was agreeing with him, how great they are and how heavy they sound, and they're just great, 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 great. Well, so I figured, let's get there on time. We went to a really good sushi bar in Berkeley. Mick Punk lives in Berkeley. So I picked him up, and we went and had some sushi, which I couldn't really afford, but he bought my ticket, so the least I could do was pay for dinner. And then we went to the show. We got to the venue about, maybe a little bit before 7. The show was supposed to start at 7:30. Raven Age was supposed to go on at 7:30. And they came on about 7:27. You know, I figured, well, I've heard such great things from Eddie Trunk and from Steve Harris about how great his son's band is. So let's go check out The Raven Age. Why not? Well, Eddie Trunk said they were so great. And I kind of made a few mental notes. So out comes these guys. First one comes out as the drummer, skinny guy, looks like he might be, I think they're from the UK, so he's probably Indian or Hindu, or that's not important, that doesn't matter, but he had short hair, nicely coiffed facial hair, and in-ear monitors, and he came out and flashed the metal horns to the crowd. All right, metal horns to the metal crowd. A little bit dated, I would say, but no big deal. Then out comes the rest of the band. The two guitar players had short, cropped on the side, hipster haircut, like cropped, shaved on the side, like really, really buzz cut on the sides, and a little bit of a mop, like kind of the Jonas Brothers type haircut, okay? Tight black jeans with holes in the knees, but they weren't just ripped up in the knees. They looked like they took a pair of scissors. Each guy in the band took a pair of scissors and cut a big hole in the knee, like a circle hole, so that you could see the knees. Looked extremely contrived, and they all had in-ear monitors, and the in-ear monitor wires were like sticking out way out the back of their head or out there behind their belt. And I couldn't think of anything that looked less metal than in-ear monitor wires crammed out the back of your outfit. Another thing I noticed, they had backing tracks. And Eddie Trunk has been on this, quote, crusade rally cry against bands using backing tracks. Well, the Raven Age used backing tracks on every song. Not vocal backing tracks. And maybe they did most of their background vocals were like gang vocals, so maybe there were some gang vocal backing tracks. But mostly, it was a music bed backing track to make it sound heavier. I noticed it on just about every single song, if not every song. And, you know, a little bit hypocritical of Eddie Trunk. He just, yes, I'm bad-mouthing Eddie Trunk. I don't mean to bad-mouth the guy, but yes, I'm probably just jealous. But, okay. Strike one, backing tracks. Every guy in the band, every guitar player and bass, and the two guitar players and the bass player, all wore their guitars super high, like necklaces. Strike two. And I don't know, I kind of like my metal bands to look like musicians and not like hipster college kids with the short hair and the perfectly cropped facial hair. And most important of all, strike four, their songs were, I guess the way to describe their music was drop-tuned alt metal, generic drop-tuned alt metal. So by drop-tuned, I mean tuned down probably to C or whatever, like go, 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 go. So you could not hear any kind of melodies. The one good thing I will say about them is they did dual guitar harmonies, which, you know, I'm always into that, but their songs were not catchy. The singer did not have short hair, but he had his hair back in a ponytail, and he had a headband on, which, no real opinion about that. This was okay, but his singing was not good, and at one point in the show, he said the lamest thing. He asked the audience to everybody pull out their cell phones and turn on their flashlights on their phone. So, in the entire arena, it was an arena show, it was at the Oakland Coliseum. Well, let me take a sip of this fine iced tea that I can't drink and drive. So, he asked the entire audience, everybody turn up, pull out your phones and let's see some flashlights! So everybody's got all these people are sheep, man. They all had their phones out, lighting up the arena. And of course, one of their social media guys or roadie guys or whatever, you can see him come out from behind the drums and take a picture of, like, film all the lights while they're playing their power ballad, which was probably one of the lamest power ballads I've ever heard. Completely not catchy. Their songs were not catchy. The drummer did play good double bass drums, but the band had a lot of stage to work with. I mean, it looked like Iron Maiden gave them full production. They had a big, huge backdrop, covered the entire back of the stage. They had scrims covering their amps, and your scrims are like these backdrops that go in front of the amps, with, you know, more logo stuff on it. And there were, on the video screens, of course, there were advertisements for the new Raven Age album. I don't know what label it's on. They were on, but it said, featuring on Spotify, blah, blah, blah. Song's not good. They played about 45 minutes. Nobody seemed to really be that into them, except that they, you know, they did pull out their flashlights, and maybe they were into them. I don't know. I was not into them. Maybe I'm just old, but to me, they seemed really bad. I don't know how they... I guess they got backing or something. You know, God bless Steve Harris. I mean, it's his kid, you know. Of course he wants to give his kid a chance. I don't know if he was not an... Maybe if he was an absentee dad or something, but as the leader of Iron Maiden, I would think you'd want to tell your kid, maybe you want to let your kid fail on his own, but give him some constructive criticism. Say, dude, son, your songs ain't that good, mate, or something. But maybe the songs are great and I just am an old man. I don't know, but, or maybe both. No, their songs are not great. I know a bad song when I hear one, and those were bad songs. I mean, they were just generic songs, so. Maybe Steve Harris is financing their entire deal. Maybe to make up for being an absentee dad. I do not know. But good luck to the Raven Age. My prediction... in a year and a half, they will be broken up. That's just my guess. Although I predicted that about the Tip, too, and that didn't happen. So I have been wrong before. So Iron Maiden, you know, I played an Iron Maiden show review from, I forget who called it in, but thank you for to the person who did. Was it Rock and Roll Banker? Maybe. They were fantastic. Opened up with Aces High, with the plane coming out. The plane in person was awesome, man. The plane coming out was just absolutely awesome. Eddie came out, of course. If anything, the only complaint I would have about Iron Maiden was Bruce Dickinson's had Scream for Me Oakland about maybe 20 or 30 times throughout the entire concert. Other than that, Steve Harris, I've said it before and I will say it again, best bass player in rock, hands down. The guy's got a great tone, plays with all five fingers on his right hand, on his picking hand, plays with his all, uses the thumb and the four fingers, just an absolute ripping bass player, great tone. He's got this bass strap that's like super padded, which is kind of amusing. The three guitar players, I know a lot of people don't like Yannick Gers, they think he jumps around and acts too goofy, but I kind of like that. That's kind of endearing to me. He seems like a cool dude, and he seems to really love. He's a Blackmore. You can tell he's a Blackmore disciple because he does the things with the guitar chord, you know, slapping the strings with the guitar chord, and he does all these moves with the strat that he plays. He was great. Adrian Smith and Dave Murray, both badasses. There were times in the show where they did triple guitar harmonies. It was just completely badass. With the Steve Harris bass just laid down, man. Great tone on Steve Harris. Of course, they opened up with, you know, they had the back, the intro tape of Dr. Doctor. Entire audience singing along to Dr. Doctor, which is why the Butlers play Dr. Doctor. It's a great tune, and everybody loves it, and it's so rock and roll. So that, you know, nothing changed as far as that. They've always done that or have done it for a long time, and hopefully they'll continue to do it. All in all, great Iron Maiden show. Bruce Dickinson, a little goofy at times, but that's okay. He's having a good time. The stage, theme of the stage was like Army Battleground. You know, there was like camo stuff that made it look like they're like in the jungle, covering all the amps and all the the sides of the stage and in the back, and a different backdrop every song. They would change backdrops. It was just a well done production. I mean, really good production. They had Flight of Icarus. This big guy on wings came out, and a big huge Eddie with horns just had came in the back. Big, huge Eddie and during the Trooper, I think. Bruce Dickinson had a sword fight with Eddie, which was amusing. Always fun to see Eddie. I moved to the back. We were up close up front, and Mick and I were up front, and pit started going. At 57 years old, I ain't hanging out in the pit. I don't need to get my tooth knocked out by an elbow or anything like that. So I said, Mick, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and if I can't get back, I'll be at the soundboard. So he said, okay. And I went back. I said, oh, I'll get a beer or two while I'm here. Why not? Well, $17 for a Modelo beer. $17. I bought one. Boy, I nursed that Modelo. Let me tell you. So I went and hung out by the soundboard for the last half of the show. I was watching the sound man, the front of house guy, you know, the guy who runs the main board. That guy is a master at what he does, man. He was riding these knobs. I was more into watching him ride the knobs and push buttons and stuff. When a solo would come up, he like knew every part. I mean, of course, he's been touring with him forever. I don't know who the guy is, but he's an awesome sound guy. And back at the soundboard, it sounded crystal clear and absolutely amazing. In an arena, it just sounded really good, and he was a good sound. And when one of the guys would do a solo, he'd pull him up high in the mix, and it just sounded badass. And he's singing along to all the words and chair dancing while he's doing it. The guy was just a badass, complete badass sound man. If you know who he is, let me know, because he's good. So all in all, it was a great Iron Maiden show. It was worth not having any sleep. I got up this morning at 5 o'clock. I slept in. I usually wake up at 4:45. But I slept in last night till 5 a.m. So I worked all day. I'm completely exhausted right now. I'm hoping I get to practice a little bit early so I can take a nap. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe I'll get there a half hour early and I can get at least 20 or 30 minutes of sleep. I'll get in about probably midnight again tonight. I got home at like 12:15 last night, and you know, after you're at an Iron Maiden show, your adrenaline's kind of flowing a little bit, so it takes a little while to fall asleep. And I woke up in the middle of the night a few times because of my dogs, and so it was kind of a not very good night's sleep, and I am completely wiped out right now, and I expect to be even wiped out more tomorrow. Hopefully I'll make it home without falling asleep at the wheel, and everything will be okay. One other thing about the Iron Maiden show, they closed out with the tape of Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, which is a little bit coincidental, because lately I said that on a few of the Dog Days episodes. I ended up with Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. So thank you for listening, friends. Remember, life is good, and always look on the bright side of life and stay frosty, okay, friends? You know how to reach me, rockandrollgeek@gmail.com, area code 706-621-ROCK, or just email me an audio comment to rockandrollgeek@gmail.com. You can find the show at rockandrollgeek.com. Find me on the Facebook, R&R Geek. There's a Facebook group, as you know. You got to answer a couple of questions, so I know you're not a Russian hacker. Find me on the Twitter, R&R Geek. Find me on the Instagram, RockAndrollGeek, don't ask. Thank you for the donations too, friends. I promise you I'll be doing a long show next week. I'm debating whether to do a track-by-track of the new Jesse Malin, or I can do a track-by-track of the new Black Star Riders. Have both. I've given them both a lot of listens, so I can do one or the other. Let me know which one you would rather hear, Jesse Malin or Black Star Riders. I'll probably eventually do both. Maybe I'll do both on one episode. We'll see. I got a lot of new music to play. My friend Nick Cripps, band The Brutalists, their album just came out. He sent me that, and I like what I've heard so far. lots of things I can be doing, and I got an outline of things to talk about and things to play. There's a new Airborne song out. Lots of things to do. So as soon as I get time to sit in front of the computer and do a show, I promise you I'll do it. And hopefully you still care enough about the Rock and Roll Geek Show to care if I do a long show or not. Thank you for listening to this one. I'm going to play a new song before I get out of here. Brand new Michael Monroe. This song was written by Rich Jones, formerly of the Black Halos, and Steve Conte. Sounds like it's more of a Rich Jones rip because it sounds a little bit Black Halos-ish and American Heartbreak-ish. American Heartbreak and Black Halos were kind of like friend bands, and we played a lot of gigs together, and we were around at the same time, and the music had a little bit of a crossover, you know, a little bit of similarities in the two bands. And, well, this song is extremely catchy. I mean, I like this song a lot. So far the first two songs I've heard on the Michael Monroe album that's coming out in October, I think it's called One Man Gang. The song One Man Gang and this song, Last Train to Tokyo, both super catchy tunes. If the whole album's like this, it's going to be up there in the top five albums of the year. So hopefully it will be. All right. Thank you for listening, friends. Here's Michael Monroe, Last Train to Tokyo. I will talk to you soon.
It's a rock and roll geek train wreck.